Morning, all. The first case for argument this morning is the United States v. Scott. Mr. Dodd.
Members of the court, this is an appeal from a conviction in the Southern District of Indiana. Jeffrey Scott was convicted of conspiracy to possess with intent to deliver and to possess methamphetamine, and his sentence was enhanced under Section 851 with two prior convictions. He was sentenced to life in prison. This appeal states and argues that that sentence is disproportionately heavy and is cruel and unusual under the prohibition of the Eighth Amendment of the United States Constitution under the narrow window provided by the Harmelin case from the United States Supreme Court. The gist of the argument here is that the statute under which the defendant was sentenced, that is Section 841, recognizes a difference between the recidivism penalty for one prior conviction after a drug conviction and two prior convictions. With one prior conviction, it's 20 to life. With two prior convictions, it's mandatory life. The guidelines also, in computing criminal history classifications, recognize that prior convictions which occur two prior convictions which occur before the arrest and charging of either of those two convictions would merge and only constitute one prior conviction for the purposes of the guidelines. And the court discussed this in its recent decision in United States versus Cannon, in which this court reversed a term of years sentenced by the trial court and told the trial court to impose a mandatory life sentence. In that case, in Cannon, this court said that since the defendant's second offense was committed after he was arrested for the first offense, these counted as two separate convictions for the purpose of imposing the penalty under 851. The argument in Cannon by the appellant was that this should be one conviction. In the instant case that's before you, the facts as pulled out of the 851 allegation filed by the government are that this defendant committed both prior acts, one in Kentucky, one in Indiana, before he was arrested for either of the prior acts. The charging informations in those cases, as set forth in the 851 allegations by the government, are that he committed the Indiana offense in 1994, the Kentucky offenses in a period between 93 and 95, and he was charged in each state in the year 1996. So that both offenses were committed before he was charged for either of the offenses. Now, it's our position that those facts differentiate this from Cannon and also brings us into the situation where the statute, which recognizes the difference between one conviction and two conviction, that's Section 841 for the purpose of sentencing, and the guidelines, which would treat our fact situation as one prior offense for criminal history category purposes, evidence a clear intention by the court and the legislature to treat repetitive criminal conduct more harshly the more convictions that are obtained. The purpose of that is clear, I think, in that a defendant should be given the opportunity to reform himself through the penal system. And almost all discussions of penology say that a guy should be given a chance to recognize the error of his ways and reform his life.
Mr. Dodd, what if we have a serial bank robber of strip malls, and he does a half a dozen of those over 6 months?
Yes, sir.
And over three states. And then the prosecutions commence. Here you have two, but So we that wouldn't – he'd have no priors by the time he got to, the, let's say, the fourth conviction?
He
in the sense that there hadn't been any arrest for any of the five or six robberies?
Yes, yes, Your Honor. That would be correct under my analysis. However, he might be able to – and I must confess ignorance – have sentences served consecutively one after the other for each offense. I'm just not sure of that. But, yes, under my analysis, that would be true. Until he's had the opportunity to feel the heat of the justice system and the opportunity to reform, then he should not be treated as a serial offender, as Mr. Scott has been, even though he only had one opportunity to see the errors of his ways and reform.
And, of course, no court has adopted this novel approach or argument that you're making here to us. You know, that
as far as I know, Your Honor, no. So we all have the opportunity to do something new. So it is the defendant's position that given the fact that his prior convictions are the result of criminal activity that occurred before he was arrested for either, that in fact he's only had, as we say in the brief, one bite at the apple, and to impose mandatory life sentence on him and to read the statute and not even recognize the fact that the statute differentiates between one and two prior convictions, that the guidelines differentiate between one and two prior convictions, and to say you've got one shot and you blew it and now you're in prison for the rest of your life, we believe is disproportionate and falls within the narrow exception to no disproportionality in the Harmelin case.
He would have been better off if they had not run concurrent then, right? In other words, they've been consecutive? The sentences have been consecutive?
The sentences in the state cases were run concurrently.
That's right. He would have been better off, under your theory, if they'd done consecutive, right?
No, I don't see that would change anything. My theory.
Well, there would be two, at least they wouldn't be served together. In other words, two convictions would be served together.
Well, if he had done the real key here is being sentenced and then going out and doing it again. That's two convictions, and for recidivism purposes, as we view it, as we view how it should be, and we believe the application of Section 841 under these circumstances is disproportionate and fits within the very narrow window that Harmelin allows for disproportionate sentences being cruel and unusual punishment. Thank you.
I want to reserve some time for rebuttal. All right, thank you, Mr. Dodd. Mr. Brookman.
Good morning, and may it please the Court. My name is Matt Brookman. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney with the Southern District of Indiana. I'm here on behalf of the government, and I'm asking this court to affirm the sentence that was handed down to Mr. Scott. I understand Mr. Scott's argument with regard to the rehabilitation and whether that should be considered as a mitigating factor, but that's not the law under the statute 841. 841B1A provides for, in the case of a defendant who has two prior felony narcotics convictions, a mandatory life sentence. And this court has previously said in the Cannon decision, which Mr. Dodd cited to, in which the court pointed out that a mandatory recidivist enhancements are compatible with the Eighth Amendment. This case is not distinguishable from Cannon. Like the defendant in Cannon, this defendant had two prior felony narcotics convictions. They were counted separately as two prior convictions by the court for purposes of the 851 information. They were valid for that reason. They occurred in two separate crimes unrelated to each other, occurring in two different states, prosecuted in two different courts. And moreover, as the court in Cannon noted, you can look at the guidelines as well, and in this case, both convictions counted separately as guidelines, countable offenses under the guidelines. So they were clearly two countable offenses under the law, The court properly did that, and the only result then was the mandatory life sentence.
Let me ask you, would your position be the same, let's say in one state the same players were involved with the defendant, you know, gets charged, and in another state same players are involved but gets charged separately, would your position still be the same?
My position would be the same, because I believe under the 841 analysis they would still count as two separate prior convictions because the crimes occurred in two different states. If, however, it was one conspiracy, perhaps, and the conspiracy occurred in Indiana, mm-hmm. where one of the substantive acts was charged in Kentucky, that's possible. That might only be considered one crime, and I concede that that would be a different situation.
Brooke, what if there's a sale in the morning in Milwaukee, and the U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Wisconsin goes forward with a charge, and there's a sale in the afternoon in Chicago, and the U.S. Attorney in the Northern District of Illinois charges a sale, let's say. They both get, he's dealing up and down the highway, apparently. But we have these two prosecutions, two arrests, and subsequent prosecutions. And now we have, just shortly thereafter, in Indiana, the U.S. attorney indicting on a third. Now, same day, two U.S. attorneys, two districts, and you're going to ask for life in the third case?
Well, if they all occurred the same day, the three convictions, I doubt if he would have two prior convictions before he would go to trial on the third one if they occurred in the same day. Let's say
he pled.
And I'll be honest, I'm not certain of what the law is off the top of my head with prior convictions if the convictions occur after he's already been charged with the third crime. I think, and again, I think that those don't count under 841 if he's already been charged with the 840 with the current crime, if he hasn't been convicted of the old crimes yet. But if he had been convicted of two prior, even if they were the same day, the distributing in Milwaukee is a separate and distinct felony narcotics conviction, and so is the one in Chicago. And if he had both of those convictions already at the time that he committed the new crime in Indiana, then yes, he would be chargeable. And I would point out, too, that...
And he would still face the mandatory life imprisonment.
If he chose not to plead guilty and go to trial, he would still face the mandatory life imprisonment. The Harmelin case with the Supreme Court also, part four of that case also discussed this idea that perhaps a court should be required to look at mitigation, the nature of the criminal history or the nature of the underlying crimes that are resulting in the criminal, in the mandatory life sentence. And in that case, they indicated that there was no requirement that a sentencing scheme consider mitigating factors such as the nature of the criminal history. So I think it's all the Cannon decision is on all fours with the all square with the Harmelin decision in the Supreme Court as well.
Let me go back to Judge Flom's hypothetical for a minute. Let's assume that he actually went to trial on both of those, you know, the Indiana case and the Illinois case, and found guilty. Then he gets charged. That the third charge comes up, your position would be it still wouldn't be disproportionate. I mean, even if it was just a small amount in each state, he went to trial on each one, it happened the same day, you'd still take the same position.
If he went to trial on both of them and he was convicted and he was found guilty, yes, because those of us in the criminal justice system who consider, you know, what we consider a small amount, the legislatures of the states or the federal government have decided that distributing narcotics, if you're a distributor, if you're a dealer, that's a felony. And if you have a felony prior narcotics offense, then it subjects you to the 841 B1A enhancements if you go out and commit a third one. It's harsh, and it's not something
I
enjoy.
He's not a casual dealer. If he's doing his business in Wisconsin, Illinois, and Indiana, right?
That's true. And, you could bring up the hypothetical where this defendant only committed three distributings in his entire life, and they just happened to be three separate offenses. And frequently that's what defendants try to tell us when they come in and want to negotiate a plea. But that's a harsh situation, and that's why there is some discretion under the law for the prosecutors to. That's why there are pleas instead of trials and things like that. But just on an academic standpoint, if he has two prior distinct felony narcotics convictions, he's subjected to the mandatory sentence if he goes out and commits another one. I don't have anything further unless there are any more questions. I don't need the rest of my time.
Apparently not. Thank you, Mr. Brookman. Mr. Dodd?
Your Honor, I really have nothing more to add unless there are questions.
I guess not. Well, our thanks to both counsel. Mr. Dodd, you have an additional thanks to the court for accepting this appointment and appearing in court.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Case is taken under advisement.